Hi, everybody. Ethan's already super upset because I'm yelling into the microphone already this morning. And I'm not even, I don't think I'm yelling. If you guys think I'm yelling, let me know. But I don't think I'm yelling. Anyway, this is our episode with Jason Leventhal. Jason Leventhal is the original founder of Lion Skis. He is the founder of Full Tilt Boots and now the founder of his own brand, J Skis. They kind of have a different approach to the way that they deal with marketing and the way that they deal with direct consumer sales. And I kind of talk through the differences and the different types of sales with him. And we talk about why he chose to go that route, his background in the ski industry, and what J Skis really stands for, and as well as Forefront, which is a brand that they have acquired and turned around in the last 6 months to a year. My phone's going off, so sorry. Anyway, before we get into that, we should mention a couple sponsors. I just wanted to say a quick thank you to Apres Headwear. Apres Headwear is a hat company that was originally started in Stowe, Vermont, but is now based with Steve Brown in Eagle, Colorado. They make some awesome stuff. They do custom work. They do like just regular hats that they design. You can buy them on their website. Website is apresheadwear.com. If you find anything you like, be sure to use our promo code, which is out of 10. And that is out of 10 to save 10% on your purchase. I'm losing my voice here. It's early. It's rainy. It's shitty. I skied yesterday, though. So really nothing to complain about. And I just wanted to say a quick thank you to Panda Poles. Panda Poles makes, they make ski poles made of bamboo. They're fully customizable from the grip to the basket to the shaft. You can pick all your own materials. They're made in the U.S. I mean, it's just a dope product. For the link, you can hit up our website or just go to pandapoles.com and let them know that we sent you. We always appreciate that. And without further ado, here's our episode with Jason Leventhal.
Let's just jump into this thing, huh?
Yeah.
So we're here with Jason Leventhal. Jason, what's going on?
Not much. I have no idea what I'm supposed to be doing, so why don't you tell me?
Nothing. We're just basically going to talk. We'll kind of go through your story a little bit. We'll talk about the skis, like your business model. Basically, that's kind of what we cover on the show for the most part is like my background is retail, obviously. Like that's what I've been doing. It's like the family business is the ski industry pretty much. So like, or the ski shop, I guess the retail side of it. So like, it's not all we talk about. It's not a shop podcast by any means. So like, we kind of just talk about, we talk to different people in the industry pretty much. So, you pretty much started this whole twin tip thing, right? I mean, you're like the inventor of,
I'm one of them. Yeah. There were some early people that didn't get a lot of credit, but sure. Yeah. I definitely brought it to market with the most noise.
So what's your career been like for people that don't know? How'd you get into the industry? How'd you start?
I started making skis as a college project because I just was bored of skiing because there was no twin tips and snowboarding was going off at the time, and that was twin tip, and they were wide. You could surf in the snow better. You can carve turns. They had deep side cut. They had flex. You could butter on them and do ride forwards and backwards and open the world to a whole other variety of tricks and things you could do and explore on snowboard that you couldn't do on a ski. So I decided, hey, why not make my skis the exact same way? So I started making twin tip skis. And once I got on them, it was kind of a no-brainer. They should exist. They just didn't. And if they had existed, right, I would have just bought a pair and been all good. Right. But they didn't, so I ended up making them. And then eventually still there weren't any. So kept making them and then eventually took off once some other brands jumped in on it.
Right. So yeah, I mean, it's crazy that it didn't exist and now it's like such a, like twin tips is its own category. Like when you go to a ski shop, that's like the first thing out of a lot of kids' mouths, I guess, when they're looking for skis is like, I just want twin tips, you know? But a while ago, that wasn't even a thing and snowboarding was kind of like the cool sport. Do you think that had a, you think twin tips is a big reason why like skiing's kind of coming back as the cool sport again?
Yeah, but I think a twin tip kind of a tail on your ski is like an SUV having all wheel drive or four wheel drive. It doesn't change how you ski if you don't use it. You know, if you want to go backwards, you can, but there's no requirement to ski differently if you don't. So most skis have a tail of some sort. Like when I say they didn't have any tail, I'm talking like dead flat. Like if you went backwards in a tiny bit of slush, you would have like endoed backwards. So this is, even today, an all mountain carving ski not intended to go backwards has some sort of tail. And then with rocker, it's evolved so far that like I don't even refer to skis as twin tip anymore. They all have a tail of some sort. It's more like how much rockers they have, the side cut, the flex, how stiff is it, how wide is it. I mean, width is the biggest indicator of how a ski performs today. And going backwards on them, like, yes, some are targeted more than others, just like some PAL skis are, but most skis are right middle of the road right now. You can go backwards, you can ski soft snow, groomers, you can carve, you can go straight. You know, that's kind of the future of ski design, is do more with less variety of product. Where 10, 15 years ago, it was each ski was very specialized and people were exploring new frontiers, making them crazy wide and seeing what that did, you know, making them, you know, for just for skiing park, you know, and see what that did. And eventually, you know, a decade or two later, it's really come down to you probably own something between 95 and 105 for your everyday ski. And maybe you own one PAL ski. And it's kind of that simple because the skis are so much more versatile.
Right. Yeah, they've changed a lot, and especially like in the past 5 years, like it seems like it's all over the place. Like for everybody skiing on wider stuff, like we still get people into the shop and I see it all the time on the hill. It's like, are those snowboards or those powder skis? Like, what is this? And it's just like a regular all mountain ski. Like 100 width is like, it's kind of the
Yeah, back out. 100 width 10 years ago was a PAL ski.
Like totally.
Specific.
Can do anything ski. Else with
That's it. What the Pocket Rocket from Salm was 98 wide. And that's what I ride and everyone rides in the East on ice every day.
Right.
So it's all relative. And then there were powder skis that were 125 plus, and now that's come down to like 115 widths. So yeah, it's getting simpler instead of more complicated.
How did you know? Like, it's like, yeah, making all kinds of noises over there. How did you transition from having a ski company in your garage to having a company, right? Because there's a big difference, I guess, from just making skis in your garage to having a ski company.
Yeah, I just did more of the same thing. If I was more business savvy, I would have been in business longer in that way, but I didn't know really what I was getting into. So I just said, well, I was doing this by myself. Now I'll just do it with five friends and we'll make thousands instead of like 20.
Yeah.
And what happened is eventually you kind of hit a glass ceiling where I got up to selling 4,000 pair and was losing money like crazy. Like the more successful I became, the more out of business I was about to become. So success from the outside isn't always the reality on the inside, because there's like killing it, as you might say, in terms of like, man, you're killing it. Well, in what way? Like, you're doing great in terms of people being aware of your product and liking it, but you're not actually making money doing it. You're losing money. So you're actually killing yourself and you're going to be out of business soon. And no one will recognize that until that day comes. I mean, that's what happened with Line, when my, you know, eventually I sold to K2. I just couldn't take it any further. It happened with Armada. You know, they're doing over $10 million in sales and can't pay the bills, you know? So this is how it goes. You know, companies end up being on the verge of going out of business often when everyone thinks they're just crushing it and doing the best they've ever done.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny that people look at it like that from the outside. You kind of get that a lot, I guess, where people are like, they think you're doing it and they think like, even if you're successful in the ski industry, like you're making a ton of money, but I guess it's not really the reality in this industry.
It just depends, man. I mean, it's like that in any business. Anything you sell, you could be, you know, there's big public companies doing, you know, a billion in sales and not making profit. You know, it's possible. So,
right. So why do you say that you would have been, why do you say you would have been better off staying in your garage longer? Would it have kept it cleaner? Would it have kept your money cleaner? Would it have kept the business cleaner?
No, not staying in the garage longer, but if I operated it thinking about more, am I financially stable? Like, am I going to survive financially? Not just like, some your bro patting you on the back, be like, that was awesome. That video was cool. Like that pro is great. Like I love that ad.
Right.
Like those are all great things. But if it's depleting your bank account, then you're going to crash, you know? And I wasn't paying attention to that. And I didn't know how to adjust my business so that I could financially survive, you know, independently. And so eventually I got an investor and, basically bought half the company and moved me to Burlington from Albany. Okay. And took a lot of the stuff off my plate, like the manufacturing. I wasn't packing boxes and building skis one at a time by myself or with friends, but more figuring out the marketing, the product, just like the business as a whole. I was focused on sales and marketing and product development while someone else was working on, you know, the engineering, the factory, the operations, the shipping, the finances, like all that real deal business stuff that keeps you in business.
Right.
Once I sold it to Carhu, they were making cross country skis. They started making my line skis. That was in 1999. And then we were stabilized at that point. But, you know, we kind of took it from the garage to like a real business, kind of medium size. Mm. But then a few years later in 2006, hit that same glass ceiling, even with these additional resources, couldn't get beyond 6,000-7,000 pair of skis a year, and sold it to K2 just so that we could survive, basically.
Right.
And from there, with those resources, we were able to grow. I mean, it's kind of like starting a car or a shoe company. It's like there's really, if you're going to play their game, you got to be huge volume.
Because
there's not much money to be made on each sale.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like the cost equation doesn't always make a lot of sense. Like, especially like with the amount of cost that goes into making a ski, like people think, I guess, from the outside looking in, that it's so easy to, you know, you make a ski, it's simple. Shops, when they sell it, are making a ton of money on every ski. The company's making a ton of money on every ski, but there's just so many things involved with it, I guess, that people don't see.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, if you want someone to know about it, you got to pay someone to market it, right?
Totally.
I mean, you market it yourself, but even Facebook, as free as it is, or Instagram or any of these platforms, you have to eventually pay to get enough people to see it.
Right. Yeah. To get that reach.
So it's like, even though you're not only relying on print ads today and athletes can promote themselves to social media, there's just a need to still spend money to get the word out. And that's not cheap. And you need customer service people and you need to pay your taxes. And, you know, by the time it all adds up, you got to ship it. You got to buy the boxes to ship it in. It just all adds up. And you got to hit a certain volume. So instead of doing it that way, or the way that I've found to solve that problem, that mathematical problem of basically not making enough on each ski, which required me to have to sell so many, which was impossible. Mm. I would have had to sell 30,000 pair to survive on my own selling to stores. Today I sell direct and I can sell 3,000 pair and be stable financially because I'm making more on each pair, right? You know, you're cutting out the middleman, you're making the profit of the retailer, making the profit of the manufacturer, and you're not paying a sales manager, you're not paying a sales rep, you're not going to trade shows, you know, dealer catalogs, you know, the displays in stores, you're not traveling around to trade shows, you're not, all these things you don't have to do, and you're going direct. So now I can sell a tenth of the amount of skis and be financially stable. I don't have to be some gigantic corporation to survive in skiing only because I'm selling direct. If I didn't, I would have to be gigantic. I've already tried getting there and it's not possible.
Yeah.
And I've seen others fail as well, you know.
It's hard. And that's one of the things that I kind of like, I wanted to ask you, is like, how much cleaner is it really for you? You know, because there's so many things that still must go into it, right? From a promotion standpoint, and you're marketing yourself. You don't have that big company pushing it, I guess. It must be better. I mean, you seem to be happier with it, like going direct.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only way.
Yeah.
I mean, I just wouldn't have started a ski company if I couldn't sell direct, because I know I can't financially sustain it. Mm. You can't sell to stores and sell less than 30,000 skis a year and stay in business.
Yeah, it's hard. You got to be in every store.
I mean, there's a limit because a store only has so many spaces on the walls. You know, there's like, say there's 20 spots for skis and you got 5 for this brand, 5 for that brand. Now, if I go in there, they have to take one of them off the wall to put mine on.
Right.
That means I have to sell easier.
Bigger.
They have to make more money. It has to be a better scenario for them to buy my skis and put it on that space on the wall than Salomon, Rozzy, Vocal, K2, you know, all these big brands that you know are going to sell to them for cheaper than I can.
Right.
You know, so you really can't, you're limited by the decision of the store as to how many skis will reach your end consumer if you're counting on the stores to reach them. That's a reality that I've everyone else has found. And that's why small brands go out there and they bang on doors all day, and often the shops won't even pay them. You know, they'll ship them
totally
to the store and 6 months
sure.
later,
I can tell you that for sure.
Like, it didn't sell. Like, so we're sending them back. And
yeah,
you could have sold that to a customer yesterday. You know, now I sell them today and I get paid today.
Yeah.
You know,
I guess that's an interesting way to put it too. And that's one of the things that, like, when I first saw that you guys were doing direct, I was like, okay, this makes all the sense in the world for this reason, because, like, I know, like, from the shop standpoint, I know, like, if it doesn't sell, we don't want to pay you. Like, it's straight. And it's not like, it's not that we don't like you. It's not that the shop may not like your product. Obviously we liked it, but there's other brands, and we've got huge brands that
there's 20
need to
brands.
Get paid.
That, yeah. There's 20 brands that want to be in your store, and there's only room for 4 or 5.
Right.
If you think of it that way, then, like, the amount of financial and time that I'd have to invest to push one of those brands out that have existed for 50 to 100 years, like, it's not worth it.
Yeah. Have you, so since you've made that decision and since Jay Skis has been a thing, how long has it been?
5 years.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Have you gotten a bunch of shop reach to you? Like,
shops email and calls because, and they want to sell them because they get, you know, we'll sell 4,000 pair this year. So there's 4,000 people going into a store asking them to mount a binding on them.
Totally.
Right. So some shops have 10 people and they're like, geez, I got to, you know, what is the deal with these things? I should look into getting them, and they can get them. We do a demo program where the shop pays just like the customer online by credit card at a discount, so they can make a profit selling, but they more so demo them.
Right.
If the customer wants to buy it through them, we just drop ship it. Basically, it's like a special order.
Right.
So it's a program that, like, that is reasonable, you know, is affordable for us. It doesn't suck up any of our time. We don't have to go visiting shops to do it. If they really want to be in on it, they can. You know, I'm done convincing people too. I can, in a 5-minute conversation I have with a shop, I could have sold 5 customers, you know, online.
Totally. Yeah.
So it's just the way it is.
Yeah, the online thing's interesting. That's always been like a topic of discussion, I guess, in the ski industry since Backcountry's been around and since Evo's been around. It's like, do we shop local or do we shop online? And I think the answer's kind of been both.
It is both, man, because there's stuff you got to go in a store, try on a helmet, you got to get your boots fitted, you got to get bindings mounted, you got to tune your skis, and that's the place for physical interaction. I think shops could do a lot more too. They could be doing like tours of the mountain, instruction lessons type things. Let's, like, physical interaction that gets you on a hill, gets you on a bike, you know, whatever it is. And if they buy the ski, great, but there's a lot of other ways to help a customer out.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot more, and it seems like that's where most shops that are still doing well in the internet and social media age, it's like the shops that do a good job at mixing all things.
Sure. Yeah.
Seems to be succeeding well. Do you guys have a plan for the future? Like, are you just like, no, we for sure don't want to sell shops, we don't want to go back to that model? Or, like, are you guys considering going into everything? Because that's what a lot of companies seem to be doing, right? Is they're doing direct to consumer and they're doing in-store retail.
I mean, it's just skiing, man. There's not enough business. Like, you're only in business for 5 months a year.
Right.
So, like, to get heavy on anything in terms of, like, setting up your own shop or
trying to,
like, I mean, you're just, I already know you're going to be running in place trying to get into a store that you're going to make not enough money. You're going to spend 70% of your time to make 10% of your money. And you could have been investing that into talking to your end customer. I mean, that's what I love, is I'm literally emailing my customers. They're emailing me. You know, we're talking on the phone with each other. I mean, that's just something you don't do when you buy a Salomon ski. You don't talk to you know, the guy
that started and runs
and designs the Salomon skis. But you do with me. You know, you reach out to us. My email's all over the website and people talk to me. We've got live chat from 9 a.m, 10 p.m, 7 days a week. You know, so we love talking to our customer. We don't, you know, talking to a middle person to then talk to our customer, there's no need to go that direction. It doesn't make any sense.
So where, I agree. I mean, and I think that's one of the things, like, when I first was on the Jay website, it's like, you guys do a couple things, like, really, really well. It's like social media, you guys kill it. on the website, there's always customer service available. Like, that's like, to me, that's a huge thing. That live chat thing, people, we have that too for ours.
Yeah,
and it's like,
awesome, man.
They love it.
Well, it's like going in a store and there's no one there, you know?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, because that is just like, it's a one-on-one conversation. They can ask all the questions in their head and they don't feel pressured like on a phone call so much.
Yeah.
And they can just think of everything. I hate it sometimes because we get a lot of dumb ones that are just like, oh, like, what's your favorite, like, kind of ice cream? And, like, it's
it doesn't matter. I got a bunch of dudes here that'll tell you. They're down with it. They'll go with the flow. I mean, I did the same thing with Forefront. You know, that was financially struggling, that brand, and acquired them last summer. And basically, with over 1,000 pair of skis that shops had ordered, we canceled them all. And we just sold it direct. And we sold 3,000 pair. And we went from basically 15 years Forefront not making money, basically, you know, losing money to being profitable in 6 months.
That's awesome.
So it's not something that you just wake up out of bed and just like, that would be kind of cool to do. It's more of, this is the way to do it, you know, at this size. You know, if it had been 30,000 pair a year to stores, and we would have kept going with it, you know, and also sold online, but it wasn't that way. It was literally drowning the business, you know? So, you know, with Forefront today as well, you know, we got live chat, we got email, you're talking to our customer service, who are all skiers, you know, 12, 14 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's working great. And, you know, Forefront's killing it now.
So acquiring Forefront, has that been obviously the more you take onto your plate, the more it adds like a new level to what you have to do. Is it a lot of work for you? Obviously it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Is it distracting to anything else? Are you unable to do other things, I guess, is my question. You know, obviously it's a lot of work.
Well, I'm not literally, I was last year. It was exhausting. And luckily, and it's still tiring owning a ski business, but last year trying to integrate and complete, it was like trying to rebuild the engine of a car while you're trying to win a race. Like you're driving the car and rebuilding it. Like, we completely had to change everything in order to financially succeed in a very short amount of time. You know, I acquired it in August, and that's when you start selling. So there was no preparation. I had what I had. The factories had already shipped, you know, or the shipping was on its way here. All the product was designed, the athletes, the marketing, everything was there. I had to quickly just flip it and turn it into a more profitable, sustainable business. I mean, when I say profit, I'm not saying like, hey, we got to drive around in Lamborghinis here. Like it's skiing. Right. Like, but we can't lose money or you just won't be in business, you know? And so for me, the most important thing was keeping that brand going, you know, had been one of the first, modern free ride American started microbrew ski companies. You know, I started Line in 95. Our motto was early 2000s as well as Forefront. And, so I didn't want to see it go away. And we knew that it had an amazing story, amazing product, award-winning product. It's on every magazine. It's front and center as, you know, one of the top skis. And we just need to find a way to sell it that, you know, enabled it to be sustainable. And so, yeah, it was absolutely bonkers. But then, you know, and Matt Sturbins, who started the company, he stayed with us and got us rolling that first year and through the gnarly transition it was. And now we've got other people. So I'm not day to day just like drowning in the work.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's fully integrated into like a well-oiled machine, you know, as far as how we sell, we market, we develop product. And so now it's just another responsibility, but like, you know, I'm not literally doing 16 hours of work a day instead of 8, you know,
right.
But I'm still working 12 hours.
Yeah. It's still just as much. Yeah. You're still doing a lot of work. It's just now you're working on other stuff. Yeah. No, I get it.
Yeah. I just kind of divide and conquer, but I got a great crew of people here. I mean, 3 years ago, it was just me and Taylor who does J marketing. It was just two of us sharing an office with someone, a design crew. And then last year with Forefront, it was like 5 of us and now it's 10, you know, and 4 people are seasonal, you know, they're just for the winter when customer service, work specifically. But yeah, it's been nuts, man. We move offices every 12 months and we like walking on each other if we don't,
But
we're pretty good position now with like Forefront selling a little over 3,000 pair and Jay over 4,000.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's in 6 months. That's a pretty crazy turnaround to be from not profitable to profitable. So clearly something must be working.
It's just that dramatic of a difference. And it's not like we're going to make this money and do 30,000 pair this way. You know, like you just, there's only so much acceptance in the market for a smaller ski brand, you know, like there's just the masses of people out there are going to just look to go to a store and buy a brand they've known, you know, it's the few that are looking for that heady topper, you know, that micro brand of beer in the form of skis that, and we know, you know, it's a few thousand people and that's cool. You know, maybe it goes up to 5,000, but we, you know, we don't have these forced expectations that no, you have to get to 30,000 skis or fit, you got to be X amount of the market. Like, we don't have those constraints or requirements over our heads, like do this or die. It's like, we're doing it, we're good, we're like selling a few thousand, we can make decisions for what's best for the sport, best for the athletes, best for the product. We're not forced to kind of sell out in the name of making more money, like you would if you were a public company, which I've worked for in the past, you know. Public companies just do whatever it takes to make more money. It doesn't matter if the product gets shittier.
You got to keep the board happy.
Cut marketing, cut athletes. Like, yeah, that's not the case here. We're doing what's best for these brands because we're able to put it back into ourselves.
Yeah. And I guess it's, I mean, it's about the health of your own brand, right? Yeah. You know, that's, it's an important, like Sago just, I don't know if you saw that, Sago cut like all their retail shipping. So Sago Skis used to do this, like they used to do direct and to retailers. Yeah. And now they're like, can't ship to retailers. We didn't get paid enough in time. So we're not shipping to anybody. Backcountry's going to get their order because they paid on time and they're the only one that's getting their order and no one else is getting shipped this year. It's like, but it's crazy to see, like you look at them from the outside and you're like, okay, they're doing pretty well. They're growing, you know, but you don't know shit, I guess, until you look at the books and you actually look at the numbers. You
can't make money selling to shops, unfortunately.
It sucks, especially when you're growing. I think that's the hardest thing is like...
You're too small. Yeah. You're just too small. Like if you sell five things for a dollar, you have $5. In order to make a living in order to buy groceries, you'd have to sell 50,000 things for a dollar, right? I mean, that's the deal. Or you, what if you could sell one thing for $50,000? Obviously, I'm exaggerating, but that's the point here is like, you're going to make a dollar if you're selling to stores. This is just a traditional business model, so you have to do a lot. That's why the Ford and Chevys of the world, the Nikes, you know, that's like Levi's, like these guys are doing like massive quantities, so they don't need to make as much money on each unit. And everyone can have a nice business, right? It's like the retailer, the distributor, the sales rep, you know, the factory, and that's fine. But when you're not selling, you know, millions of units or hundreds of thousands of units, and you're selling literally like 2,000 or in some of these brands, it's 200, you know, you can't sell it for a dollar, you know? Yeah. And, you know, obviously it's not a dollar, but just equate it to, let's say at a store, you'd sell it for $100. You'd make $100 selling to a store.
Right.
Let's just do simple, simple math. You buy it from a factory, which would be cheap when you're small or making it yourself. If you did that for $200, that would be a great deal.
Right.
Now you're going to sell it to the store for only $300. The reason is the store is going to double it to $600.
Right.
So there it is. You made $100 and you make 1,000 skis and you make $100 off each. That's $100,000. Don't forget, you got to ship it. You got to buy boxes. You got to market. You got to pay the guy that's, you got to pay a lot of people. Yeah. Someone's on the other end of your company. Totally. Someone's answering the phone. So that $100,000's gone. That's 1,000. That's a, you know, 1,000 units. Like most of these little brands aren't even doing that. Right. So there, you can't do it. It's just a,
You're not getting paid on time.
Yeah,
it's not even that. It's like you're not getting paid until later, even if you're paid on time.
You're being a bank. You have to borrow money from a bank and then be the bank to that store. So if you sell it direct, let's say you bought it again for $200 and you sold it direct for $600. Yeah. Now you made $400. That's four times the amount that you just made versus selling to a store. So now instead of having to sell 1,000, you could sell 250 pair. And make the same money as if you sold 1,000 to a store. And you didn't have the costs of trade shows, of dealer catalogs, of sales meetings, of all that stuff, you know, and financing them. So that's like simple math. Any kid in fifth grade can write that down on a piece of paper and understand.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of accepting it. You're not going to be the next psalm, and you're not going to build 400,000 skis. No, and it's not easy to do that
either. Yeah. I
mean, if you have 100 years, you could pull it off just like they did. Or
a buttload of money. Like, if you just have all the money and you want to throw, I mean, that's like, what's that saying? It's like, if you
want... takes a lot of money to make a little or something.
Yeah, it's like, if you want to make a small fortune in the ski industry, start with a large fortune. It's like, that's exactly what the deal is, I think. And I think it's true. Like, it's crazy. Like, I don't know.
Well, it's just a seasonal business. I mean, if you went, if you were, you know, buying a store on the street, and you decided to only be open for 5 months, people would say you're an idiot, right?
Right.
But that's what we're doing.
Yeah, we're idiots. So.
We're just extremely passionate about skiing. We just like what we're doing. So, you know, you're gonna basically have a business with all the expenses year round, but only make money half of it, you know? Right. And there's lots of seasonal businesses out there, but
they
shut down half the year sometimes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, we used to do that before we were doing bike stuff, and now like bike stuff is the way that we stay open. And but honestly, I liked it better when it was just ski and we closed. It was like, it's like for people that I like the mountain bike side of it for sure, but I like having fun mountain biking and not having to worry about the retail side of it.
Yeah.
Do you actually get out and go skiing enough, like as much as you'd want to?
I could always go more, obviously, but I go like once, maybe twice a week.
That's awesome. That's so good, dude. Compared to like,
well, I mean, only 40 minutes from a mountain.
I know, but still, like, we like our Rossi rep. It, like, shout out to Dino, he's the best. But like, he skis not until February, and skis like 2 to 3 times in between February and the end of the year. It's like, how do you do? What's
it's
the
passion,
point?
Man? I know. If you want to ski a lot, don't work in the ski industry. That's your busiest time.
Totally. Yeah, you got to work weekends. You got to work weekdays. You got to work as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, it's half the year. It's all you got.
Right. So let's talk skis for a couple minutes here. Yeah. What's, so you guys do a few different models. I'm not super familiar with the line. So kind of like, what's the breakdown? Are you guys just, obviously when line came out, it was kind of marketed more towards freestyle kids.
Yeah.
You guys aren't marketing just towards freestyle kids.
No, we make all kinds of skis. The beauty is when I'm selling direct, like there's really not need for more than like 6 models of skis in the world. The reason people make so many variations because they want to hit every price point for every shop or market or distributor or Japan or Germany or whoever. But really, we make 6 adult models. It's a 90 wide and a 98 wide and a 104 wide freestyle ski. So you got 3 widths depending on how much powder you ski. They're pretty very playful, easy. The wider they get, the more surfy they get. They all carve, you know, I'm an East Coast guy, so they all carve awesome on firm snow. But they're just really playful, nimble, lively freestyle skis, like a little more symmetric and whatnot. No metal. They all have some carbon in there. So that's that. It's called the Whip It, the All Plane Vacation, 3 widths. Then I have 3 other skis. I have the Master Blaster, Metal, and Friend. And in that order, they go from 96 to 106 to 117. And so those are a little more powerful, where the others are more playful. These are more powerful. Some of them have Master Blaster, some of them have metal in them. They're a little stiffer flex. They're more directionally set back the stance for not going backwards as much. And but they're still much more playful than all the other more European brands, I'd categorize on the market for like an all mountain ski, where they're coming from racing and they're all mountain kind of powerful skis are so powerful. A lot of people come to us and be like, these are tiring. You know, it's hard to maneuver, you know? There's a couple models out there that just beat people up in terms of like wearing them down just to like get it in the trees. So our free ride skis that are the more directional, powerful skis are still super fun, nimble, playful. And people come off there and they're like, wow, I feel 10 years younger, you know, cause I'm not making them where you have to be an Olympic athlete with like legs of steel, you know, you can be, and you're going to have a blast on them.
Yeah.
But if you're a desk jockey all week, you know, and then that one day or 1 week a year, you go skiing, these skis are playful and easy enough where they're not going to tire you out.
Hmm. Yeah. I think that's one of the cool things. And like, it's actually something that I liked that Line started doing later was like, there's skis for the kid that progresses out of being in the park only.
Yeah, for sure.
Because that kid does grow up at some point and he wants like an all mountain ski. He wants to go out and ski. He doesn't necessarily want something floppy and fun and you know, like it's a different kind of animal. Are you guys selling more of that first category or more of the second category?
They're even, but I would say people are going a little wider in the freestyle ski. When I say freestyle, it's just like freestyle feel, but you could still take them all over the hill. It's not like I'm only in the park. the narrowest one is not as popular. Like a 90 width these days is getting less and less popular. People are going to like 96 plus. So otherwise, yeah, I mean, we sell, it just depends on personal preference. That's the thing. It's not whether you can land a double flip or something like that, or slide a rail. It's just like, do you want a lighter, playful ski, something that's more forgiving? Do you want something more powerful, more grip it and rip it?
Right.
And it just depends where you're coming from. And we'll put you on one of those six skis. And we have a money-back guarantee. I mean, if you don't like the skis after riding them for a few days, for Jay and for Forefront, you can return them. Like, no problem. Like, take the bindings off, ship them back, refund your money, or swap them out for a different pair. That's how confident we are that we have the right ski for you. And that's why you're talking directly to us. You're on live chat. You're on email. You're talking to me or one of the guys here that knows everything about these skis, and 99.9% of the time, we're going to put you on the right ski. I mean, we're the ones designing it, you know?
Right. So you kind of have an idea of what customer it's
We're holding your hand right through the whole process till you get them. And even after, if you don't like them, we'll work with you, swap them out for something different.
Yeah. And that's one of the benefits too, I guess, that being able to sell direct is that if you weren't selling direct and weren't making cleaner money on that stuff, you wouldn't be able to offer a money back guarantee.
Right.
Like, even if you really wanted to and you were really sure, because I'm sure not that many people return them.
Right.
Like, it's not, that's not the idea, because
we control the whole mess, you know, everything.
From yeah. You have to your
the
hand.
Customer. It's like, I'm going over to that customer's house. I'm figuring out what's best for them. If they don't like them, they take them back. Like,
yeah,
we know every one of our customers, you know, we sell to 13,000 people a year. You know what I mean? Buying clothing and bags and poles and everything we sell. So like, we're one-on-one. That's the future.
Do you think you guys are kind of benefiting from, like, it seems like, let me backtrack here. It seems like there's a resurgence, I guess, in people wanting to go to indie brands. And I guess, like, yeah, you mentioned Heady Topper, like, that's a thing lately, is like, people want to chase good beer. That's like, that's a little more in limited supply. Obviously people are still buying PBR, but they're looking for a nicer product. Do you guys think you're benefiting from that? And like, you're kind of hitting it right place, right time. And that's helping growth for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I was with Lion in 2013, we had gotten pretty big. I mean, we got up to like 40,000 pair, and I think there's a glass ceiling, honestly, about there. That was globally. Mm-hmm. So, and that's with K2's backing. We could only grow so far. One of the reasons I've been itching to kind of apply a lot of the more modern technology to skis in terms of like marketing and selling direct, this whole thing, websites. And I definitely saw a resurgence in people's, you know, appreciation and enthusiasm for smaller brands. I was like, I got to do this again. I want to just, you know, make it, this is the right time. So yes, that's happening. It's also kind of the farmer's market mentality. It's the like, buy local, support people you know, support small business. Like, that whole thing is going off right now. So, like you said, there'll always be the Budweisers there. But, like, people are more open to it. And I'm not saying you're going to get necessarily a better product, but you're certainly going to get more variety and more flavors of products and brands out there by having these other brands. You know, sometimes it is. Sometimes a small brand can... And we do. We'll make decisions to develop a product that a big company would never consider because they would need to sell a certain volume that they know is not possible with something that unique. You know, it's like, you will never have as many people buying Heady Topper as Budweiser, right?
Never.
So why would Budweiser try to do that so they can sell, you know, if they want to sell 0.05% more beer, they would just discount at 10 cents Budweiser. They're not going to like create Heady Topper. It's a ton of time, a ton of energy, and ton of detail for not much return. But for a small company like us, we can put that time and energy into it. And it's a big return for us. If we sell 300 pair, we're stoked. You know, if Solomon sells 300 pair, it's not worth your time. You know, so
yeah, they won't make it.
The microbrews of skiing, the smaller brands will ultimately develop more innovative, unique product that would otherwise not come to market.
Yeah. So I guess to that point though, do you think that those bigger companies are going to kind of catch on to that and switch? And do you think it'll be effective if they do? So say Solomon decides tomorrow, we're going to make this new company called Nolliman or whatever the fuck they're going to call it. Yeah. Right. Do you think they'll be able to kind of recreate that feeling? Because a lot of brands do that. Like, I mean, look at cars, I guess, right? Like
multiple
Toyota
brands.
And Lexus is like, that's the thing, you know, you just kind of split them off so that one's looked at as that premium product and one's looked at as their regular product?
I'm gonna tell you, I mean, if the people listening don't already know, it's like you got Vocal, Marker, Del Bello are owned by the same company. You right. got, you know, K2 Ride Snowboards, K2 Snowboards, Line Skis, Full Tilt Boots. You know,
they're
all owned by the same company.
Yeah.
You know, you have Salomon, who just bought Armada,
right,
and also own Atomic.
Yeah,
like that's one group. So that's the point, is they already are those big companies with multiple brands, and like they to buy a mini brand that does 300 pairs just not worth it. Like they bought Armada for next to nothing because it wasn't financially doing well, and they knew they could plug it in and blow it up, you know, do well with it. Right. Yeah. So I don't think they're going to go out of their way to start something from scratch. If something is big enough, like pretty damn big and worth it to plug it into their distribution so they know it could be bigger, then yes, you know, and that's happened with Armada. It's happened with Line, but it's not going to be very often. And I don't think they're going to start it on their own.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. It's hard to tell, I guess. And I don't even know, like, I guess we'll see. I don't even know if companies like Armada are any healthier because of that buyout. You know, like, it seems like they're just kind of going through the same motions as before. Nothing really changed that much. All that happened was they just make sure they got paid. And that was...
Well, the thing is, you don't buy a brand to turn it into something different. You would buy it to just leverage your resources, your knowledge to maintain its position, because its position should be unique, and just... kind of exploit its potential or maximize its potential. So like they're going to buy Armada and be like, we like you because you're American, which Salomon Atomic isn't based, you're American based brand, you're athlete, founded, you've got this youthful thing going on that maybe they don't have so much. They've got this racing background. These guys are all freestyle. So they've got credibility in a segment that is stronger than maybe these bigger brands have, right? And then all they need to do is distribute it to more countries, manufacture it cheaper so they can sell it cheaper and sell more. Like, they don't really have to change Tanner Hall into someone else. You know, they don't need to, change the logo. They don't need to start not marketing freestyle anymore, because then they just become the same as Atomic. They just be another race brand, you know, driven brand. Yeah. So they want to keep its DNA and really grow it using their back end resources, like financially, manufacturing, affordability, and distribution is the biggest. You know, you'll just instantly be worldwide.
Right. Yeah, it's, and that's attractive, I guess, to small brands too. Sometimes it's like that reach, the idea that you could be reaching every door in every household just like that is an attractive idea, but it's not always the best thing, I guess. I mean, we'll see. But so I got a couple questions from people on Instagram.
I
want to field some of those.
Yeah.
First question is from Jim. Jim wants to know, if I want free stickers, how can I get free stickers?
We got free shipping on stickers. If I did that, I can't keep up. I was doing the free stickers before and my hand got cramped up. it got out of control. So you can go to our website, and our stickers are like 30 cents and it's free shipping.
Yeah,
so
just go get a sticker.
Doing is covering our mailing cost, and you'll be getting the stickers essentially for free for jskis.com and forefrontfrnt.com.
All right. So we'll make sure people go there and get stickers. There's no more free stickers.
Nothing
30 cents. Stickers. Yeah, exactly. Stickers are the best, though.
They're equivalent to free, man, by the time you pay postage.
It's like 30 cents. It's like less than parking for outside of here. It's crazy. We've kind of already touched on this, but we'll ask it anyway. This gentleman wants to know, what does it take?
Who is this? You got to give him props here.
Let's figure out what his name is. I screenshotted it, but I cut it off by accident.
Okay, then go ahead.
Here, we're going to get him. Don't worry. Give him a sec here. There was a lot of Instagram messages for this one.
Cool.
ED Wonderboy. Let's see what his real name is. Eli Derrick. So from Eli Derrick, he wants to know, what does it take to keep and start a smaller ski company in the ski industry? I think we've touched this
a little bit.
But like, if you wanted to start one, what's the first step?
First step is go work at a ski shop and get your feet wet and understand what the ski industry actually is. And then one thing will lead to another. If you raise your hand when someone says you want to help us do this and just help people out and learn as much as you can, and eventually you're either going to realize that there's a lot of other opportunities other than physically making skis in the ski industry, or maybe you will go make skis. But if you're going to make skis, start as an art project. Just do it for the fun of it. Don't have any big business plans, because it'll just, financially off too many times, not worth it. If you go into it as an art project and be like, I just think it's cool, I want to make my own skis, like it's, it can be very, very gratifying.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what most people kind of want to do, is they just kind of want to have their own, like people sure. like to make their own stuff.
It's,
you
awesome.
Know, it's, people want that feeling, they want, but there's a lot of like, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors with skiing in the ski industry. It's like how stuff made, how stuff mounted, how stuff serviced.
Go to skibuilder.com.
Really?
Yeah, skibuilder.com has tons of info how to build skis and where to get materials.
All right, skibuilder.com. Next one's from Taylor Scott Hatton. This is kind of a long question. So I would really like to hear what he thinks about the current craft ski boom. He largely grandfathered. I love that North American manufacturing is on the rise, but can the market sustain 80 plus small regional companies right now? Is it past saturation? Even in Burlington, Jay doesn't stand alone because of a wave he started. HG came and went, and now Silo Skis is operating in this area.
Yeah, there's plenty of room for small companies. It's when you set your sights to have to be bigger. If you really want to be much, much bigger, then not so much. But if you want to do 50 pair a year, you know, maybe a little more or less, then I think there's plenty of room, you know. And if you want to get bigger and bigger, you're going to have to invest a lot more, and it just may not be worth it at some point.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. And that's like, I was talking about this with a couple other people that do podcasts, because the last couple episodes we've had were like, we just did one with Alex Kaufman, who does Wintry Mixcast, and we did one last week with Mark Warner from Low Pressure Podcast. So, and like, one of the things we were talking about is like, are there too many of these going on right now? And it's like, I kind of feel the same way. It's like, I don't really think so. Like, I think everybody could have one, as long as
you're
like,
marketing
doing
your shop if you do it right.
Yeah, but I don't want to market the shop. Like, I love the shop.
You should put it on your, on a page on your shop, man.
I know. I thought about that, and we do promote it. Like, we'll send it in the mailing every once in a while. But
it's a huge credit, man.
I know. But it's, I feel like it's cheating. Like, I feel like I'm cheating my growth by using the shop to blow up all my growth. And it's kind of like a, it's just like a proud way to look at it, and it sucks, and I shouldn't do it. But like, it's,
let me put it in perspective.
Okay.
Elon Musk, when he started SpaceX, be like, I'm not the guy that did the cars, or he did the cars. He said, I'm not the guy that did PayPal,
right,
or whatever he did before that. I don't, you know, it's just like, you got to leverage one thing to get to the next. Like, the reason you get into college is because you brag to them about, and you leverage your high school, you know, how you did there. And it's like, if you can just get, you know, take one step and end up further along versus 100 steps and nowhere. Use it, dude. Put it, I'd say for marketing, put it on the damn website, put it under blogs, send people there, you know, from your shop, promote it that we just did another podcast with whoever. And the people are going to be like, whoa, these guys are so much cooler than just, just slinging skis. You know what I mean? They actually care enough to go out there and meet these people and give us their, share their story. Now, at the same time, you'd have your own website, and everyone through that shop would also see it on that, and you cross pollinate. And that's what that's what I'm doing as well.
Right. Yeah, I like that idea, and I think that's kind of where it's going to end up going. But what I didn't want to happen is, like, the second episode we did, or third episode we did, we had Bryce from Evo on. And it's like, I wanted to be able to still have other shops on.
Yeah.
People that are doing well. And I don't want them to feel like I'm cornering them, like, into like a shop conversation. Like, I don't want to deal with that kind of shit either. I just want people to feel like it's organic.
People
like it's
just
regular.
Think you're down for the soul of it, instead of just wherever the next dollar comes from.
Right. Exactly. And it's like, this isn't the thing we do to make money. I just like chatting with people and letting people hear what it is.
Right,
so it's all good. So the last question I have is, so this gentleman's name is Chris. Chris wants to know, I have a pair of Enforcers now. If I'm buying a pair of skis from Jay, what do I get?
It's the metal or the Master Blaster, depending on what width. The Master Blaster is 96 wide and the metal is 106. And both are super playful, carvy. They'll surf in the pow. They'll grip it on firm snow. They're light and nimble. I think they're one of the more versatile skis in that category, in terms of you go in the tight trees or you go on the open groomers, you go on the bumps, and they're going to be good all around. I know everyone says that generally, but you know, a lot of the skis in this category, and don't get me wrong, that Nordica is an awesome ski. If I wasn't riding mine, I'd probably ride that Enforcer.
Yeah,
so
it's a good ski.
It's a good ski.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it isn't, but, you know, compared to most of the other brands in this category, they're, like I was saying before, they're really overpowerful. They're more than you want for the every you know, someone, even a high performance skier, like they're coming from a very race based DNA, those European based brands. So people, you know, we're in North America here. We're all about skiing for the fun of it. You know, you buy these skis because you want to rip. You want to be a technical skier. You want to be high level, of course, but you want to have fun, like fun. You know, you don't want the ski to overpower you. You want to overpower and play with the ski. And make it do whatever you want, even after you've been skiing the whole day. You know, on the seventh hour, you still want that thing to be nimble and easy to maneuver and not tire you out. And that's where all the J skis come in.
Right. So we'll wrap this thing up here. So where can people find J skis? Where can people find you on social media and online?
Yeah. So go to jskis.com. If you want to check out Forefront, it's forfrnt.com. Those are the two brands. Forefront is a little more powder based, a little more free ride, Utah based, fatter, stiffer skis. Jay at jskis.com is a little more playful, nimble, a lot more about just having fun out there, a little East Coast based, but still ripping the pow. And you can find me at Jason Leventhal on social media, and you know, give me a call or an email anytime. That's what we're here for, selling direct and talking directly to you.
Awesome. Well, thanks for doing this, bud. I appreciate it.
Right on.
All right. That was our episode with Jason Leventhal. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about interviewing Jay, and I wasn't sure what he was going to be like, but it was great. Their new offices in Burlington are super nice. Everybody was super welcoming. And it's actually where we recorded the Ian Compton episode as well. I had a great time doing this, so thank you to Jay and his team for putting up with us for a couple hours. And we hope to do it again sometime soon. Be sure to follow them on social media at JSkis. And as always, follow us on social media at Out of Podcast. And if you could leave a review, we really, really appreciate it. It just helps other people find the show. And it just boosts our egos in this studio over here. Anyway, thanks, guys.